we're approaching that. We're at the dark of the moon. The dark of the moon is traditionally when allies such as the likes of everybody listening gather to determine the course of culture. And what a good time to do that, right, as Al-Qaeda arises. You know, for this is the close to the 25th anniversary of the Visionary Activist Show. We like to do the mythological news as well. We go, phallic narcissism rose 40% yesterday with the banning of abortions in Texas at the same time as expanding guns. You know, as Steve Behrman said, against abortion except at the 103rd trimester. And we go, oh, right, there we go. And the justices, we approach the equinox, which is about justice. I think 13 would be a lovely number. So on our homepage, coyotenetworknews.com, you can find out about the autumnal equinox cahoot with Deborah Falmouth and Sean Patrick O'Donohue by donation only, September 22nd. And also the astrological chart interpretation course, more on that, you know, on the website. And on today's radio post as well. And also, we are putting forth a collection of some of the most fun last 25 years that you can find at coyotenetworknews.com, including the first show with James Hillman and Woofy Women, many great things. So we put that to one side. Okay, so here we are at the dark of the moon, and it is perfect to host Molly Chester, co-creator of the Biggest Little Farm film that many people had been telling me for years to see, and I finally did, and it's like, oh, it's fantastic. Really, truly. Molly's husband, John, co-crafted the film with human, animal, plant guiding mentors. We want to honor mentors. But with her beautiful chart and her beautiful embodied self, we say the woman hero makes beauty, food, and story, does something wonderful that then becomes a story that travels and inspires others to do something wonderful, which then becomes a story that travels, and so on until the earth blooms with altruistic ingenuity, one of the themes of this movie. You can find out more at thebiggestlittlefarmmovie.com. We say cooperation, compost, control. So welcome, Molly Chester.
Hi. Thank you so much for that beautiful intro. And I have to say, when you describe it, it feels so lovely. I almost get lost in the words.
No, but it's perfect. You know, as we did a session with yourself before I knew who you were or what you did, and it's like, oh, but you are very much. I just have to say the beautiful order that is our booking agent. So your chart that you're embodying beautifully, Venus, Mars, and Moon in Libra in the first house. It is the woman hero. Does exactly what I said, you know, and it has a beautiful, your moon is 5 degrees Libra, and right now in the sky, Mercury is at 5 degrees Libra, which is fabulous, and the image is a woman's vision is crystallizing before her. So I know you're super wonderfully busy. You're in the final edits for your cookbook manuscript, and This show wants to give you woofy blessing and encouragement so that you feel even more enthused about your wonderful contribution to the world. There we go.
Oh my gosh, that's so wonderful, and I actually already feel it. This is going to be fun.
This is fun. It is super fun, and I just have to weave a little astro mythology through the thing, because you know when we spoke and now Pluto in the sky, death rebirth cycle of the Earth, you know everything in the world pours into our psyches in a customized way. So the death rebirth cycle, everything into the cauldron, and what shall we ladle out? And it is exactly opposite your Jupiter, your storytelling, exalted in Cancer, food, providing nourishment, and your Mercury quintiles, irresistible eloquence, that particular pattern. And as I told you, the wonderful saying in the Arabian Nights, the 1001 Nights, that says, people need stories even more than they need food. I go, right.
Aww.
So you're a food and story crafter like Shahrazad.
I just love it. It's funny because, you know, I think of my husband as the storyteller, but I do enjoy words in general. So I know that there is a part of that that lives inside of me, but I've definitely had the beauty of being inspired by living with the master of it, of my husband.
Well, that is part of the thing, because as I was, you know, rummaging around in the collective mind of the internet, going, the biggest little farm, everything I got at first was interviews with you and John, going, you know, on YouTube. There's a lot. You both have been very busy telling story, crafting language and food.
Yeah.
And then the movie is streaming on Hulu, right? And then people can find out more at thebiggestlittlefarmmovie.com, right? Yeah.
For sure. Or they can go to Apricot Lane Farms, where everything is.
Ah, that's super great. So, yes, and then I like to be full service astrology, because I think, as I told you when we met, you know, I go, Pluto's opposite your Jupiter. It's the Phoenix's song. You can focus collective attention on what you deem to be important. Wait, let me make that true. Come on, radio. Full service astrology.
You.
There we go. It's adorable. So many wonderful things. And as I said to you backstage, you know, you are your own person as well as a fantastic partnership that have made such beauty, inspiring beauty. And really, truly, I say to everybody, it's like this is a most worthy contribution to our collective cahooting. It is really super great. Thebiggestlittlefarmmovie.com, so most worthy. Because it's like, oh, look at how it could be. And there's a few grumpy reviewers over there going, oh, but it took lots of money. But we go, yes, it did. But as you say,
this is our role. Yeah, this our role is to just show something different. And that couldn't have been as fast-tracked if we didn't have the support of our partners. But it's in that combination of differences that enabled this to become something greater. And when John and I first walked onto the farm, it was funny because I was standing outside and a barn owl flew over my head. And at that point in my learning of nature, I was like, oh my gosh, it's a white owl. And I go home and I look up owl to see what it is. And it meant healing of some sort with the white owl, like the white snowy owl. That might even be wrong, but that's something that I had read at the time. And I was like, oh, it further proves that this space is a healing space. And I wanted it to just be something that when people came onto it, it was like a lens that made them be able to see something different. And then believe whenever you step into it, all of a sudden that becomes a possible reality. And that was kind of a little intention that was set at the very beginning.
Absolutely. No, envisioning. It goes with another one of my favorite shows, Judith Schwartz and the Rainbow Chronicles, which is about people doing equally hard work to you and John, but to bring back what part of the earth has died. And we go, right, this is what we want, you know, in a world that is so, you know, right, hyper yang and Yalqaeda and right the suppression of things and everything inflamed, all of that. We go, cool water. What shall we do when the world is on fire? And well, the film begins with the fire, right?
Mm-hmm.
So and then the all around you and the animals and as John says, you know, I didn't know I had so much to lose, right? And then the wind shifts. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's exactly right. And it is something, you know, I'm not from California, and so experiencing fires is something that I did not grow up with. I was with tornadoes and things like that. But it's a feeling unlike no other in that it feels kind of like grief. You're surrounded by this force, and it's hot, and it's dry, and it smells, and you don't know what's next, and it's unpredictable, and you just want it to end, and it's not going to, and it just cooks and cooks and cooks. So I like the water reference that you had. It's sort of that feeling of being near a fire sort of feels like what's going on in the earth right now.
Well, it is.
It is. Yeah.
No, and even my radio guests of several weeks back who wrote the book Inflamed, which is a worthy, you know, it's like we got to know, right, about how it's all, Dr. Rupa Marya and Raj Patel. But they said many things, you know, again, the fire, the inflammation, the virus, the colonialism, all of it. But they said, you know, when their colleagues at UCSF got COVID and lost their sense of smell, all they could smell was forests burning. So it's all speaking to us, right? It's like,
wow, that's brutal.
And it is. And, you know, I never wanted to go to Burning Man. I wanted to go to Replenishing Woman, really. But so I go, right. So.
Yes, I hear you.
And something I've been working with myself, right, the micro to the macro, I'm still mopping up water on my floor, little micro flood of the larger floods, right? So we're all in this dream, right? So yeah. I've been also saying the virus is hot and spiky, so let's be cool and smooth. Right. And I'm using that when I get spiky or inwardly mean comment about someone or something. It's like, no, smooth. The virus is hot and spiky, and it's drawn to that which is hot and spiky. And we go, cool, smooth. There we go.
Oh,
we can be agents
nice.
Of cool response in a hot,
positive
world. So I love, and many people I've told about the film going, no, you really do want to see this. You really do. Even though it's famous, you do really want to see this. And I said, it begins with a promise to Todd the dog, which is so wonderful. And he's an important mentor character throughout until he becomes an ancestor. But the promise to Todd, may we all make promises to our beloved animals to go, we're gonna buy a farm for you, which that's
totally.
What you did.
Totally. Yeah. You just, it's like, it's just commitment, basically. You know, it's commitment to anything takes you on a really wild ride, and yet the wild ride has that foundation of commitment that makes you rest into that and know that you're in some sort of process with whatever you're going on, and that it's not meant to be aborted because you at some point felt that crystallization of, I'm going to do this for this reason. And I think that Todd was that catalyst for us of like, we have to find a solution to this crazy dog barking. I mean, I have so many insane stories from that time back then when we could not get him to be quiet. And then that led it to the farm, and then the commitment to the farm took us on this crazy wild journey, and we just basically kept saying yes to that original commitment. I mean, same as you do with marriage and anything else. So, yeah, he was a large reason, and he's still running around on the farm in the ether.
I love to think so of all of our beloveds, and it's, again, you just said a perfect guiding principle, you know, really, which every kerfuffle, it's like, here's your eviction notice from your small apartment because your dog's barking, is an incentive to create greater beauty. It's like, oh, the dog barking, we're getting evicted, we're going to make fantastic beauty, and over 8 years, it'll work out, even though it doesn't always look like it's going to, and we'll make a fantastic film. So totally. Todd and your eviction from the rental was got you into your big dream, a hard one. I mean, we that's evident in the film, and they're beautiful places where John also says, you know, when there's the poignancy of like, I want to come back to your wonderful mentor, you know, but intent alone is not a protection, and it's like right.
Yeah, I had to learn that one. Yeah, because I'm sort of a I'm an evolved, my optimism has been a force to be reckoned with through the years, but I'm definitely kind of it's not tempered in some way. It's maybe more, just has more wisdom to it at this point. And I understand that it doesn't cause you to be able to escape the hardships, yet I still hold on to the kind of knowing that whatever is in front of me is bringing the changes that are needed for the greater good. I have sort of an innate feeling of that alignment in things, no matter how hard it gets, that it's sort of on that trajectory to what is needed in that moment. And yet John saying that, I mean, that's where John and I play. We're definitely kind of a complementing force, and he sees things I don't, I see things he doesn't. And whenever I was in the stage that my optimism maybe didn't have as much wisdom with it, then he really would get sucked into the abyss of the worry of it. And that was his journey to then get to the place of what he said in that movie. And now I have more of, we have more of each other in each other at this point. So it's become a bit more of a balance.
That's good. So you still like each other?
Yes, we still like each other. I mean, John and I have gone to the depths with each other, and we have, you know, hated each other with every fiber of our being, and we have loved each other in every fiber of our being. And yet it was another one of those where we just kept showing up, and we continue to keep showing up. I mean, we got to where we got to because we had personal counselors and couples counselors and business coaches. I mean, it's not magic. There's a little magic, but it's also the actual work of growth. And in that, now we're coming to this really nice understanding of our interdependence and our space as human beings and our complementary personality traits. And it's becoming really fun. And the same thing on the farm, actually, too, that the farm, we have so much alignment in our leadership, and so much work has been done in the emotional growth of the living human organism of the farm, that it's becoming this joyous experience of getting to ride this wave with people I truly love. we're in a new space, not really any easier, but more in alignment, and that is innately a bit easier.
No, that's so great. And as we like to say here for 25 years on the Visionary Activist Show, magic is simply a willingness to cooperate with everything, going, And that's really, you know, a thread throughout
totally.
The film, you know, that we, you know, and as John has said in the film and in interviews, you know, it's like sometimes we felt appropriately a true story that there were antagonistic forces, and sometimes we were those, and we want to talk about that. And then, you know, early on and throughout the film, you bring up your mentor, Alan York, right?
Mm-hmm. Alan, yeah. He was fabulous.
Yeah.
He was
your mentor in trusting and cooperating nature, going, yes, it's going to be hard, it'll look terrible, you know, but by, you know, the third spring you get paradise, you know, and then it's going to get hard again, you know, but by the time you get to year seven, you know, it'll kind of work out.
Exactly.
Right? And he's kind of your mentor designer, but then, you know, what's 3 years in, 4 years in, he dies.
Yeah. He dies. Yeah, that was an incredible ride because, you know, you want to think you really know what you're doing when you start, but you don't. And as much as I probably have more of an articulated understanding of what we were going for now than I did even back then. I literally, you know, I originally thought, okay, I want this to be organic. And then I start looking into organic and it's like, wait, that's just, you can't use this, but you can use this less toxic substitute. And it didn't feel like it was coming from anything bigger. And so then I had heard of biodynamics. So I looked that up. And as soon as the website popped up, I was like, yes, that's what I'm looking for. I mean, that's the kind of logic that can get you in trouble. But it was, I was really drawn to that. And then through learning more about biodynamics, I got connected into Alan. And when Alan showed up, I mean, I would love today to sit down with Alan and be like, good grief, what did you think of me when you first opened the door? Because it, you know, I was just this young, you know, naive, but passionate, driven, responsible, you know, person. And yet he had all the wisdom and all the flow and all the understanding. And so he just very graciously dealt with my kind of ping-pongy, bubbly nature and helped. He would leave each time he came, and I would have like a 5-page list of he was very good at both being abstract and having it be linear. So I would have this linear list that I was to do, and that was my Bible. You know, I did every single thing and checked it off, and then he'd come back. But if only now I could talk to him and actually understand. You know, I didn't understand. I would think sometimes when John and Alan were off to the side, down on their hands and knees looking at the soil, I'd be like, guys, what are you doing? We have so much to get done. What are you doing? Well, meanwhile, that's the complimentary side of John, that was the important part. You know, he was knowing what we needed to do. And so somehow through that pull and tug, we got everything and more out of that situation of getting to be with Alan at the time. But then right when we had planted this huge block of 75 different varieties of fruit trees, Alan passes. And I mean, I was so angry at the beginning that I couldn't process anything. I was just like in anger for it and thinking, Alan, how did you leave us right at this moment? But the crazy thing is, as you know, that all processes and passes and you get by it. I look back and I know very well that was the moment that we were meant to fly. Because Alan, as amazing as he was, he was there leading and we were following. And I think if he had stayed, Alan and John and I probably would have had a few, you know, meetings that we'd have to get through about that balance, because it was the time John and I were supposed to take the wheel. And I like to think Alan would have known that and stepped behind us, but I don't know. But him departing, then we had no choice. So we had to step into that scary place. But in turn now, we've worked with many other consultants and things, and we always will, but we've never stepped away from the wheel. We've never allowed somebody else at the wheel. And Alan really was at the beginning at the wheel.
Right. That is such a powerful moment in your lives and in the farm and in the movie. And it reminded me so much of a great, 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 wonderful environmental ally, Bob Goff, who died some years ago. And I was talking to his great friend, Virginia Daly, and she said, you know, Bob got me to move out, you know, and live where he lived, you know, on the Lakota Reservation to live with the Indians. And then once I got there, he left, and I was so mad at him. Mm-hmm. I was so mad at him. But then I had to, you know, make my own relationship. And then she said, when we heard of his death, and we were like, oh, she goes, well, now he's really left. And whatever he did for us, we now have to do for ourselves. And I was thinking of that with your beautiful mentor, Alan York. And, you know, as you say, you know, he died from a particularly aggressive form of cancer, or as I like to call them, inappropriately enthusiastic cells. And from my own research, it's a poignant fractal, because the characteristic of those cells that took him out is that they've lost the capacity to cooperate. That's the chief identifier of what we call cancer. It's like, oh, it's lost. And here he was, the embodiment of cooperating, but going, you're on your own, you can do it, here we go. But very powerful, beautiful.
Yes. I really understand what you're saying. And when you wrote me that about cooperation, can you say it again, your phrase that you're saying, cooperation?
Magic is a willingness to cooperate. Oh, no, it's something else. I never know. Magic is a willingness to cooperate with everything, but also, no, what did I say? Cooperation.
Control.
That's it.
Yeah,
that's
so
it.
Control, essentially, when composted, creates cooperation. And so cancer is like, you know, they have control, or that aggressive form of cancer has control, and it's not composting to become cooperation. But that is, I really like sat here while I was waiting for the phone to pick up and thought about that, you writing that, for a long time, because that's it. That's kind of summarizes what it feels like to work with nature in this way, is that you always are kind of, you're not in control really, and you're in a state of cooperation, and that's where the kind of the sweet spot is, that then creates the flow. And it's the same in working with people and having people come together. You're not, anytime you're holding on too tightly, it starts to kind of fall apart. You have to have that individuality, and yet all of the people have to have a sense of alignment within that too. And I've gotten to the point where I can sit with someone and just feel that right away. And that's like a foundation. You have to have that. And then if you have that alignment in there, then you can kind of go anywhere. Then it's just a matter of lifelong learning.
Right. No, no, but I love another kind of Libran quality person like yourself, even though you are a great Leo queen. But, you know, our frequent guest, Ron Kauk, who's one of the best rock climbers in the world, and he says what you just said is like when you're on a sheer cliff, and he does it sometimes without ropes, you know, don't grip too hard. Right. And he says freedom comes from gazing at danger. And that's what you and John both did. You know, I mean, I think that's part of the wonderful, respectful complexity of the film and addressing complexity, which is like, oh, you know, the moral decisions, the difficult things, the mistakes, the worry, the fear, all of that, you know, and then let go of control.
Totally.
So, yes, I have lived with an actual coyote for 19 years, 19 years, 2 months, 2 weeks, 2 days. So it was an appropriately challenging moment where John, you know, has to, he feels, kill the coyote because it's been ravaging so much. And I know that relentlessness. I mean, I lived with this being, right? I know that relentlessness. We go, oh. Right, it was that coyote was killing so many ducks and so many chickens, and he did it with great soulfulness, and you know, I felt for him. However, just to bring in the mythology, in the movie, the death of the coyote is followed by this huge windstorm, and in mythology, coyote and wind are connected. They are. Oya is the kind of Orisha coyote who hurls her horsetail whip and summons the winds of change. And so I go, the coyote dies, the windstorm comes, and then things come back into a kind of balance that we're going to honor fully in the second half of the show. We have a few minutes till our little break here, but that's a beautiful part of it too. You're going, oh, and the respectful killing, the hardness of the heart going, ah. Oh. And then, so the coyote was killing the ducks, and that's when John says, intent alone is not a protection. It's like, oh. And then we will honor all these beautiful things and about how coyote comes back in, you know, and you have the snail problem and the duck solution. We'll come back over all these guys. There's the coyote wind, the drought, you know, and then coyote's part of a team. I mean, one can wheel and deal. I do know this, you know, but, and you both did. And then coyote's solution to gophers. And then we'll honor the owls and the hawks and to get rid of the starlings. And then so all of this is a collaborative dance that we want to, you know, honor even more, as well as your own beautiful work. Because when you start off, I mean, you go, you know, I was, you know, compared to Alan, who was like, oh, but you know, I was like, no, it's like, no, you were a great cook. In fact, I mean, as you know, right, and you had a cooking show, and at the beginning of the film where you're, and you have your little cute terrace garden with, you know, your first tomatoes, but you're making beautiful food. And, and that ties you into Jose Andres and World Central Kitchen and all the people making beautiful food in crisis and in microcosm as well. So you were a formed person. I mean, don't you think that being a cook, you know, was crucial to this thing and also what you're doing right now?
It was definitely. I think that if you understand food, I just was talking about this today. You kind of, you innately have an understanding of soil. The properties of soil is like a, it's kind of like a sourdough starter or a, you know, however, and you are, the more understanding you have about how to truly nourish through your gut, then the more that you really get what you're doing, the exact same thing out in the field. So when I first started on this, everything that I did came from my understanding of how food affects the body. And it actually worked in that sense to start from there because it is so similar. And now I've, you know, come to understand the soil in its own right. But I do think that that's how I may not have had farming experience. I certainly didn't know how to use a tractor, still don't very well, but the but I do understand the gut and the soil innately.
Yes. That's really crucial. Our wonderful guest is Molly Chester. Her husband really crafted the film. That's also what's like, whoa, this is so beautifully shot. So well, it took 8 years, right? We'll come back on that. We're going to have a very short break, and we'll come back to our perfect guest on the 25th anniversary of the show, Molly Chester, and the biggestlittlefarmmovie.com. You can go there, and we'll be right back after this very short Taj break. Here we go.
She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his tortoise cry.
Oh, get down.
Chiny, 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 come blow my chiny home. Chiny, chiny, come blow my chiny home. Telegraph my indigo skyship, make its voyage long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, and we are approaching, we're dark of the moon, new moon on the 6th, but the equinox, of course, will be the 22nd. And as my collaborators on that Zoom Kahoot on the 22nd at 5 p.m. West Coast time by donation, you can find out more at coyotenetworknews.com. And as both my collaborators, Deborah Felmuth from Syria and the Middle East, there we go, and Sean Patrick O'Donohue, Celtic herbalist, wonderful, both great guests of show, they say if there is ever an equinox to dance things back into harmony, this is it. We go, right. So you can find out more about that on coyotenetworknews.com. We're also putting together a 25th anniversary collection of shows that you can see there, that you can download. And I'm going to be doing also an astrology chart interpretation transits course by application only. If you get turned down, that's fine. There's many other wonderful things to do. We're doing an experiment all at coyotenetworknews.com. So let's, back to Molly Chester. Well, I love this. I feel this to be true of you. Woman hero makes beauty, food, and story, does something wonderful. That's what the film is, The Biggest Little Farm Movie. It's so beautiful that becomes a story that travels and inspires others to do something wonderful, going, right, which then becomes a story that travels and so on until the earth blooms with altruistic ingenuity, a phrase that comes in, late at the end of your movie, altruistic ingenuity. Yes. So,
I love that so much. That is, if that actually, and it does happen right now when we go to anywhere where we are interacting with the public, it's absolutely mind-blowing how many people are now saying, oh, because I watched the film, now I went and took back land that, my uncle had been not really doing anything and decided to renovate it. Or we moved out to so-and-so and bought land and started to renovate it. And isn't that everything? That's like the local food movement, too, because it's meant to be kind of a patchwork. It's fine that if we have a global food system, well, that's fine. That can be there and it can serve a certain purpose. But the beauty comes in that individual patchwork around each city and then being connected through that. So it's just person to person to person, land to land to land. And over time, it can make the entire world beautiful. So
yes.
Thank you.
No, it's absolutely true. It's in you. It's embodied. It's what you and John have created. Yeah, because even in my little witchery outside D.C., going, I have a tiny little worm composting thing. I call it my Pluto altar. I feed the worms many delicious things, but also undesirable newspaper headlines, which they turn into beautiful soil. And it's like, right, so a little micro going, you worms, you're connected to a larger Molly Chester project. Boy, is that an impressive worm thing you had going early. early. It's like, oh my God, it looked like a city. And the beautiful, beautiful, well, the restoration of land, it's like, oh, you did all the work. And the movie is honest about Funzhuta. And then I just want to say one other coyote wind thing, because it is kind of my assignment, you know, and the coyote realm in a quirky way, you know. I mean, it's all of ours, really. But I had a unique micro relationship to this being. So the coyote, right, and then the windstorm comes. But, see, I'm also thinking, because then both of you, you know, you work it out, and you know, and you come into harmony with the owls and the coyotes and the gophers and everything. Mm-hmm. And when the film starts, it's this terrifying fire on three sides, right? And it's like, oh my God. Mm-hmm. But then the wind shifts to my coyote, and Stella's an ancestor now, ancestral realm going, see, the coyote died, the windstorm came, you came into harmony with the coyote, the wind changed direction and saved your farm. Mm-hmm. I'm just going for that in the mythology.
I so love it. Like, and you know, so getting to know the coyote has been pretty wonderful, and I love that you lived with one for that long. I mean, my goodness, John would want to find out more about that experience, because there's so much to learn of being so close to an animal like that. But he now has since then, I mean, they've found different dens with pups that they've been following and watching for future projects that he's doing. So he really has become so one with this animal and understands instincts of it. And so it had been such a journey of going from literally killing the animal, which was a horrible day. And he's such a animal person that one haunted him for a really long time. But then to now come to the point that, you know, I think that's... Alan Savory, who's big in this world, I think he has a background where he literally caused a lot of elephants or something to go extinct, and something that he did, and now here he is renovating the land and changing the whole world of agriculture through his grassland approach. But so it often is that kind of pain that becomes the catalyst.
Right, and there's an honest part of that. You know, there's a million stories to go. Let me temper myself here, but I loved also, you know, through hard work, you know, and how you begin. Okay, the promise to Todd the dog, right? And then you said, we had what before we had how. That's the way to go. That's the way to go. Ooh. First the dedication and the vision, then it magnetizes synchronicity. And that's how you did it, because you said then, against all odds, you know, you magnetized the dream investors who saw the future. That's what you said.
Totally. Right? Yeah, yeah, I do think that you have to, I mean, that I did, that is something that I think that somehow I innately had in this life, is this draw. I mean, I can remember standing in Santa Monica and just the level of intensity of kind of feeling what I wanted to see happen. And I only maybe knew shades of what it was, but that is all then I would hold in my heart. Like, I wanted to feel like this. I wanted to be inspiring like this. I wanted nature in different ways. And then just like the intensity of holding it. And I do think that is what, you know, the manifestation came from those moments of standing and holding what I desired dear and believing in that and believing that it could be true. And it's not such that, you know, I think you should run and jump off of every cliff. People will say to me, oh my gosh, that's so hard. Should I do it? And it's like, well, is it in you? Like, I couldn't do anything else. You know, it was the only thing that I wanted to do. And so that's the place. You have to know it, you go deep in. And someone long ago, I didn't know what to do when I first got out of college, and I was really lost and didn't want anything to do with the college technical school I had gone to. And they just said, if you have an inkling of what you want to do, follow that, because it's stronger than the abyss of what you don't want anything to do with. And so I followed that inkling, which led to the next inkling, which then becomes the ability to hear that whisper. And then that whisper is what gets trusted each time, and that becomes the future.
And what you call your optimism, you know, Astromytho would call your enthusiasm, right?
Because
it's a wonderful word, enthusos. It means that which makes the divine within us dance, like, oh, yes, oh, yes, oh, yes. Mm. So your enthusiasm was is you know, again, part of what you're spiraling forth, and you did, you know, for many, many people, inspire us all to do more beauty and soil and food, yes, even in our whatever. But also, so many animals. It was my childhood dream. I used to go to Adele's pet store with a dollar and go, what can I get? And she go, oh, Christ, it's that kid with a dollar. Right, so ducks, chickens, thing. Anyway, but you do, and that's such a wonderful, you know, and poignant, again, part of the film that is done so beautifully. You know, there's Emma the pig, that's, you know, and John's hard work of saving her and the little piglings, and then the piglings, you know, grow up and have a wonderful life, and as a friend of mine who raises pigs says, you know, a wonderful life and only one bad day.
So exactly. Yeah.
They had one bad day.
Exactly. Totally, and yeah. I was a vegetarian for, from 9, I told my family, I am a vegetarian. And then I was that until 20, I don't know, 7 or something. And my health really, really declined. And I found that I'd read I was an O-type diet, which are the meat eaters, whatever it is. But I had gone there thinking that I wanted to be outside of that meat food chain. But I had to step inside the cycle of life to be able to find my sense of healing. And then in stepping inside of it, consciously, then the only answer is that you do it right. And that's, there's that movie Cold yeah. Mountain where the woman is like holding a goat oh. that she's loved her whole life and then cuts its throat. And that's pretty gruesome. Sorry, I'm there.
No. I remember that. That's the best part of that film. It's very powerful. She's holding the goat and she's stroking it and she takes the knife and cuts its yeah. throat. And it's terrible beautiful. It's terrible
exactly.
beautiful.
Exactly. And that is what it is to raise animals that are food. And, of course, we have a few pets around here, but that is
well, does,
what...
Well, does Emma get to live out her life, just out of curiosity?
She's living out her life. She's not going anywhere.
Oh, that's great.
Emma is a...
That's,
yeah, she's a pet for us. But, yeah, it's there's a brutal, you know, I always say that farming is every single emotion and very much including grief. You do not, that's something that you face very closely and have to come to understand whenever you choose to farm consciously.
Right. Well, see, one of the things that Stella Coyote, my companion of 19 years, did teach me is the difference between grief and sentimentality. And, you know, when I've lived with people, I remember these two fabulous women. We were all living in a trailer out with the ocean, and there was a farm there, whatever, and they were tending it. And they just set off with a hatchet going, well, this will show that horny little rooster. No sentimentality. The honor. And we go, right. But sentimentality is wazza. Grief is, it's like John had grief when he killed the coyote. And then also just grief, but not sentimentality about we're eating the chickens, we're selling the pigs but who have had a wonderful life. This is just part of the whole dynamic. But I also want to... guide us to the beautiful symmetry and Alan's kind of voice, because when he dies, as you said, you're at this moment going, oh, these problems, what would he do? We don't know what to do. We're abandoned. We just, what would we do? And then, you know, and holding on to what he'd said, going by year 7, what he said it would be like surfing, but by year 7, you know, it's going to be, oh, no, terrible, terrible. Oh, it's all working. Right. Mm-hmm. Which you'd invested so much dedicated, embodied, collaborative love, and it's all working. The snails eating the trees, right? And then you go, oh, ducks. Ducks love to eat snails, and that's deeply satisfying.
It is,
right? And that's part of the poignancy. When I was in Bali the first time, there were all these rice paddies full of snails, and they kept the ducks, you know, chained up in a coop. And I was with a mad woman participant who kept unleashing the ducks to the villagers' annoyance, you know. But it's like, no, the ducks into the rice paddies who eat the snail, which is what you figured out, which is great, just to restore sane, reverent nature, common sense, right? And then, right, and then the starlings, right? And this is a beautiful part of the hardship of your life. The more wonderful you made it, the more wonderful it was for the birds going, oh, we're going to take one bite out of this nectarine, and we're going to, you know, and here comes the aphids, and here everybody goes, fantastic, over here, the plague, yeah. Right? And then you just, well, then you put up the owl house. That was beautiful,
yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh, yep, still there.
And how did the hawks show up?
Yeah, I love what you're saying, because that is kind of, isn't that a truth of life, too? It's almost like there's something inside of us that you're like, oh, no, if this gets too good, then it'll be taken away.
Devoured.
Some sort of, yeah, and that is kind of the nature, is that when you create something wonderful, then it does open you up to that energy of that others want to be, to have that too. But then
yes,
in that, if you keep expanding, like you don't let that stop you and just be devoured and then you're done, you just go, okay, well then now we have to figure out how to embrace that too, or embrace the next thing, or, and sometimes, you know, you figure out how to bring in something more positive that can kick that thing that you don't want out. That can be part. It's not about like necessarily having no boundary to it at all, and it just keeps coming in and coming in. But it is that, it's that you can't stop at that fear. You have to keep going and expanding and becoming bigger. John and I used to talk in the beginning. He'd be scared, you know, of like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen with this? What's going to happen with this? And why are we doing this? And I'd be like, John, we have no option at this point. We are so far in. We just have to like go big or go home. You know, there is like nowhere else to go. And it kind of is like that you have to just keep embracing. Now, I do think looking back that because of my, you know, childhood stuff or my chart or whatever it may be, I maybe wasn't connected enough into fear, or I couldn't, it's not that I didn't feel afraid. I was a child that had plenty of fears and things, but I had such the desire that I wasn't, it could teeter into reckless with the amount of things that I was willing to take on, and that John and I, because he had kind of the same thing, was willing to take on as well. And then at some point as you heal, it becomes maybe a more balanced approach of that. But to get back to your question, the hawks are very much here. My son absolutely loves them. We have a little, we developed a school card called the Farm School here. So there's 9 kids that are learning on the land every day with an amazing teacher named Jenny Seeds, if you can believe her last name. And she has a lovely assistant with her. And they just, the amount of consciousness and awareness in these children that gets developed from them basically observing every day and becoming the witnesses to nature is really profound with how they're learning to think. But they're so keen now. I mean, Bodhi sees hawks and things before I've definitely noticed them, and knows every one of their names and finds their feathers, and they're very much here and all around. We love our birds of prey.
Yeah. No, that's right. And we don't mind them killing the thing, the gopher. Well, and then the gopher snakes, right? But just a little pause on your son. There's a great moment also, too, where just a little moment. I mean, there's so many little moments in the big moments in the film, The Biggest Little Farm. And he's a young lad, right? But I think John or you hands him a ladybug, and he does not squish it, right? He looks at it, with informed reverence, like, hi there.
Yeah.
And we go, yes, that's really it, right? He doesn't kill the ladybug. No, and therefore we will have no war when he grows up, because he's not conditioned into killing things we don't understand. So, yeah, the farm school, it's like, oh, we all want to go to the farm school, and we all want to participate in The Biggest Little Farm movie, and to have the bull, the bulls, the pig, everybody, the cat, the dogs, the wonderful Todd presiding wisely, and the hawks and the owls and I mean, it's huge. And so you did magnetize a team. I mean, because it's huge. and the insects and the the ladybugs handle the aphids, right? And then the weasels and badgers show up.
That's totally.
Well, and then the gopher snakes, and remember, just part of your chart image is a woman weaving a magical basket out of serpents, and we go, right, you go, Molly, going, here, gopher snakes, there you go, you're part of the welcoming thing, and the beautiful...
I love that.
Yeah,
that image of that
beautiful
woman, I remember that from my chart.
Right, and the beautiful lamb, there's one particular lamb who is like just... seems like he's running, or she is running the whole thing, just a deeply reflective black-faced
For sure.
lamb going, whoa. There's some great characters, right? And the individuality of the animals really shines through in the movie. It's like, oh, that's mm-hmm. so great. And the concern and the care and the what are we doing? And yeah, and you know, you and John in a big way, but it's like, is my desire to do good causing harm? You know, mm-hmm. You know, I had that too, going, oh, I'm trying to help the little birds in the nest who are too hot, you know, and I'm putting cold packs outside because they put it in the, anyway, am I causing
totally.
Harm? Oh, I might be, right?
And it's I gave question. Some of them.
Oh, sorry, say what?
It's the ever question whenever you're working with
yeah.
animals or anything, like, is this harm or not? And you really don't, I believe that there's some sense of grace for process of trying to, when your heart is trying to do good, you do mess things up and you have to learn from them. But I somehow believe that that's okay on the path of all of us evolving, that there's graciousness for the process of falling down to learn to be better, as long as it's not just coming from a unconscious denial or something.
Right. Well, that's why, you know, intent alone is not protection, as yeah. is said, and I keep repeating at a powerful moment, which is, you know, a desire to do good with information, with
yeah.
knowledge, not just la, 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 la. I mean, I know a lot of people who've desired to do good, and it's like, oh, no, they're just doing incredible harm by being, anyway, right. So that's huge, going research, knowledge, some of it read, much of it, as you and John did, earned.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So, yeah, co-operators are standing by, you know, and again, as I guess it's the voice of Alan at the end, you know, just saying complexity, diversity, all supporting, you know, the more. Yeah, because it's 72 kinds of fruit trees. And also the eggs are selling, right? I mean, this is mm-hmm. the farm wending its way economically? It certainly seems
yeah.
to be.
So it's,
yeah?
we're a complex business because we have a big research and development and education department, and then many things we're like doubling down with that. And so that we turn all of our profits back into that. But there's definitely different enterprises within what we do that are for profit and are making money. And then there's other things that are RD&E that we're figuring out, and we wait until we figure them out and then start to turn them into the more what we determine the agricultural portion of what we do. So we have many facets, but it is absolutely something that the way that we are farming is farmed around the world profitably in many different ways. You don't have to have an enormous, beautiful structure for your worm bin to be able to have worms. Those can be in the ground if you wanted to. So the most, you know, powerful thing that we did was cover crop, which is seed. You know,
yeah.
it's those are the real game changers. But I wanted to go back quickly to what you said about when you were saying about Bodhi and how that's innately and it could lead us to a lack of war and all of those things. But he one day we were sitting talking and he said, Mom, why are there guns? And I was like, well, you know, those are the hard questions. I said, well, I don't remember exactly what I said, but I said, I think that, you know, somebody needed something to either, you know, kill an animal for food, and then it became maybe a protection that they used. But then the tricky thing of that is that then maybe the person on the other side decides to get something to protect them, and then you get in this kind of back and forth of collecting more protection to each other. And I said, but I like to believe that somewhere beyond all of that is a space, or because he said, could there be no guns or something? And I said, well, I think I like to believe there's a space beyond that where that is possible. And he said to me, he goes, well, Mom, if you believe that, then you're already there.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Wow.
That's super wonderful. So
yeah.
I have just a cute little quip to play in a moment, and then on the other side I'll be thanking you, and you can have your last word.
Sure.
And everything. But it's Statler and Waldorf, and I was thinking like their review of 25 years of the Visionary Actress Show. So just for the fun of it, here's Statler and Waldorf's short review of the Visionary Activist Show. Here we go.
What was that?
That was very strange.
It was very weird.
It was peculiar.
It was kind of amusing.
Yes, it was rather funny.
It was incredibly funny.
I loved it.
Hilarious.
That's my own self-praise just for fun. I love Statler and Waldorf. So we're on our way out, Molly Chester, but it is great. And all wonderful homage to your may you feel enthused doing the edits to your cookbook. And everybody will want one of those. Your beautiful food, because the food should be beautiful and full of stories. So thank you so much, Molly Chester.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much. It was a joy.
A great pleasure. And thanks always, of course, to wonderful Kirsten Thomas and CoyoteNetworkNews.com. And you can support us on Patreon. That would be great. And you can go to the homepage and find out many wonderful things. And we, Autumnal Equinox and everything. And we will reconvene next week. Thank you, team. Woof.
Oh, yeah, yeah.